Blog Talk Radio.
Together, whether you like it or not, that's just the simple fact of the matter. Welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly. My name is Daryl Clark, and yes, you are at the right place at the right time, where here on Progressive News Weekly, well, week in and week out on Thursday evenings, at about this time, 6:30, we bring you news and information that's gathered from around the nation. And, well, even I could say around the world. Often our guests are joining us from across the oceans, And so I can truly say, I truly can say that it is international in scope. And tonight, we have another program that is intended to encourage you and inspire you and empower you. And hopefully it will instill you to get involved and make a difference. This isn't one of those sit on your hands or sit back, have popcorn or chips kind of programs. It's truly one where we hope that you will be engaged. And so today I'm truly excited, and I'm excited about this particular program for numerous reasons. Whenever I can bring on a guest who is considered a partner of Progressive News, and then I can personally also say a friend and a colleague, it's just exciting and it's a thrill. And it reminds me of why I've been doing this for some 9 years. We are approaching our 10th year, and of course we're going to have to do something special as we approach that time. And so, yes, today or this evening, we have a very, very special program, and it's something that, well, myself and a few others have been talking about and working on for quite a while, I'd say at least a year. It's the beginning of hopefully a series that will make a difference for a segment of people, for the nation, and for the world. And I know that's pretty lofty, but I've always believed, you know, aim for the stars. And if you hit the moon, well, you've still made a pretty good impact. So, yeah, we're going to aim for the stars with this one. As everyone, I believe, knows, the African-American sect, and when I say sect, that section of society is in dire straits, significantly. And I'm not talking about going and watching the BET Awards or the NAACP Awards or any of the other award programs where you see highfalutin African-Americans doing very well in their $3,000 gowns and tuxes. I'm talking about the mass majority of African Americans, especially when you compare them, us, I dare say, as an African American, to other sects of society. And so this evening, as I said, I'm thrilled with the special guest that we have joining us, as we're going to be talking about that issue. How it very probably, or at least possibly, came to be where it is, and of course, some of the potential solutions thereof. And our special guest has done a significant amount of work around that. And so if you are not, I'll take the time for a little commercialism. If you have not yet joined the mail list, then you probably don't know who I'm referring to. If you are on the mail list, then you probably do. So with that, I encourage you all who are not on the mail list to drop me an email, and that email will be to Daryl, D-A-R-R-Y-L, Schiff_, CLA18@msn.com. I'll add you to my mail list, and every week you'll get a heads up on who our guest will be and what the topic will be. Typically, we always have some guest. Occasionally, we do not. And I have a specific area that I will speak to, but for the most part, We do have a guest to join in to speak to any particular topic. And with that, I would also encourage you in dropping me that email. Let me know of topics and or guests that you believe would be of interest, does not typically hit the mainstream, and you believe the masses have a need to know. And if it is on mainstream, it's not getting the attention, or it's not being brought forth unadulterated as we bring all of our programming here to the masses. And then last, I would encourage you to share Progressive News Weekly. This is a medium not to be taken lightly. 80% of mass programming are considered conservative, if you will. And it's not that I have any vindictive mindset against conservatism, but I believe in balance. And some of my views are probably considered conservative, in fact. But one thing for sure is I'm bringing you information that's for you and typically by you, because it's information that comes from your communities, and it's of you. And so, similar to what our Constitution says, which some would question if it's living up to its laurels, that's what this program is about. And so, do let me know what's on your mind. What are some of the things that we can bring to the airwaves? Be forewarned, if it hits these airwaves on Progressive News Weekly, it will be vetted, friend or foe. The tough questions will be asked in order to drill down into as much facts as we possibly can bring to the masses. So back to our program of this evening. I guess I put the carrot out there long enough, and you're saying, okay, who's the guest, Daryl, for those of you not on the mail list? Well, we're bringing it to you tonight, Dr. Eddie Taylor. Okay, applause, applause, I know. Yes, for those of you who know, Dr. Eddie Taylor, our own Eddie Taylor, is a psychologist, author, educator, and he is going to bring to us today, and in fact, he's armed with two master's degrees, not to mention his practical experience and his practical mindset. And he's a human rights activist. I can go on. I will let his words and his presentation speak for his acumen, as you'll soon find out for those of you who have not heard him before. I know the significant number of the listeners have, and have even inquired about our Dr. Taylor returning. Dr. Taylor's latest book, and you can get it at Barnes & Noble and Amazon.com and many of the other book outlets, is entitled The Day the Crabs Got Out, The Revival of Black America. So you're just thinking about that should instill some thought in itself. And having read the book, I was very intrigued and impressed. Not that I wasn't with his previous book. But this touches to me a core of one of the issues for African Americans. And that is that crab in the barrel mindset. I mean, another perspective many of you have heard of, the Willie Lynch syndrome, you know, the black on black scenario. And so tonight, I hope that this will kickstart some dialogue amongst leaders in our society, especially, and those of you who are not leaders, at least to have you engage in some dialogue. When I say who are not leaders, I'm talking about a formal or organizations, because in everyone's own right, you are a leader, whether you're head of household, whether you're married or single, you are a leader every time that you walk out the door. So I'm encouraging everyone to be involved in this dialogue, in this series, as we go forward in bringing forth those of us who want to make a difference, to see things improve, especially for the African Americans. And so, as I like to say, a quote from Dr. Martin Luther King, in a real sense, all life is interrelated. All men are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality. We're all tied in a single garment of destiny. And whatever affects one of us directly affects all of us indirectly. And I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be. And you can't ever be what you ought to be until I'm what I ought to be. It's, in Dr. Martin Luther King's words, the interrelated structure of reality. And so with that said, I'd like to bring to the airwaves Dr. Eddie Taylor. And at some point, we'll also be bringing on board one of those community leaders that I was referring to that we're hoping in the series ahead we'll be engaging in, Mr. Kevin Porter. And so with that said, welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly, Dr. Taylor.
Thank you, Derek Clark. It's good to be back on the air with you. I really appreciate the invitation.
Well, it's truly a pleasure, and you know, over these months, I know you've done the book tour and you've been busy. I don't know if you're going to drop something on us in terms of your next research project or anything of that nature, but I know you've been busy, and so I'm thrilled that you're able to take some time out and join us from the Midwest, my stopping ground, a little bit removed, and you know, me being Ohioan and you being an Illinoisan, I guess that's the word. But we truly appreciate you. You know, what you and I have been talking about for these many, many months, or I'd say years, and since you dropped the book, I guess it's been a year or so, about a year.
Yes.
Is how can we utilize some of what you've put into the book? Now, I can tell you, while I was at work today, I was talking about the program tonight, and one of the ladies, I said, oh yeah, I heard about that book. And I said, don't just hear about it. You got to go get it and read it. So I know that she's tuning in along with many others. Would you give us an overview of just 100,000 foot, and we're going to drill a little bit into the book because we have to in order to engage in the topic for tonight. But would you give us an idea, just generally speaking, if you want to call it the preface of your book, why you wrote it and what the premise of it is?
Oh, absolutely. So the reason why I wrote the book was due to the fact and due to the issues that's present within our community, most of the issues that happen within our community somehow happen. It comes from the community. There was a time in which we would have drive-by shootings that would take place from the Klansmen. They would drive by and attack us. There were times we would run from the white community to find refuge in the black community. But now when we are in our own community, in our own homes, it's us that somehow is pulling us down. And so I looked at that, and then, you know, the idea, the proverbial crabs in the barrel, is always just lingering over our community. And so I just thought, now what would happen if we got out of the barrel? What would happen if we would no longer pull each other down? What would happen if we were finally out of the barrel? And then I began to look at that, and then I began to look at, well, how did we get in this situation in the first place? How did all this begin? So I looked at that. I traced that back to find out what happened to us initially. And then looking at that, throughout history, we haven't always been in the state that we're in. There were times in which we were very supportive of each other. There were times in which we were able to pull each other up and lift each other up and to be comforted and supportive of each other. And so I look back at those times to find out, how did we do that? And is that even possible today? And so I looked at all of these things, and I found that, yes, it's possible today, and the same means, avenues that we used then are the same measures we can use today. And so I traced this all the way back. I look all the way back into slavery, going back to the 1500s, to the 1700s, and then to prior to the Civil Rights Movement. So I don't look at the Civil Rights Movement per se during this book, but I look at what happened that actually led us to the point that we can even have the desire and that urge inside of us to even want to fight for rights. So there are things that took place long before the Civil Rights Movement that gave us the idea that we deserve the right for civil rights. And so that's the objective of this book, is to get to have the organizations and the people and the community and the neighborhoods to understand that we have somehow been conditioned to keep ourselves in the condition that we're in.
Wow. Now, you said that you didn't go back in terms of referencing very much into, you know, chattel slavery so much.
Right.
What time did you focus on in this research?
Well, in the research, what I did go and look into slavery, just the idea of what happened in that process of slavery, to give us the mindset that we think that we deserve less, and somehow it is within. And so as I travel the country, and when you go into any state, any major city, you can close your eyes and tell them to take you to a neighborhood, and you can open your eyes and you will almost instantly know that that's where the majority of African Americans live. And so it looks the same, you know, whether you're in Colorado, if you're in California, if you're in New York, if you're in Texas, if you're in Illinois or Ohio. Our communities have somehow been conditioned to look a certain way. And it doesn't happen by accident. You know, all of this is planned. And so when we look at,
you know,
at slavery, and then we look at when we were actually liberated, or so-called liberated from slavery, they allowed us to have the homes or the neighborhoods or the communities or the part of the plantation that had already been used up. And, you know, the ground, the soil, you know, was almost not good enough to actually produce any type of vegetation. And so this is where they left us. This is where they allowed us to live. You know, they allowed us to wear certain clothes, allowed us to own certain things, allowed us to go to certain places. They allowed us to have certain things. And so in the mindset of some of us, we believe that that was all that we deserved.
Dr. Taylor, I'm going to jump right off the bat because we've been together for many, many years.
Yes.
Through your past books, and you know I like to drive the pointed questions, and you seem to thrive on them, I have to say.
I think that's your specialty. That's your art.
You know, what do you say to the individual, black or white or otherwise, that would say, and there's two perspectives here. First of all, that would say, are you blaming a victim? I mean, are you saying that in your book, this is African Americans fought where we are? Now, I heard what you just said, that it was no coincidence we were placed there, but bringing it present to where we are now, the book seems to, by title, now, of course,
right.
This isn't my question, it's, at, mm-hmm. and in fact, I remember from one of our programs about a year ago, getting an email, and I never responded to the individual, so I hope he's listening, and if he's not, I remember where it came from. And it was a question, and I had a perspective. I never responded after talking with you, but I responded with my own perspective. But the point was, well, Darryl, is Dr. Taylor saying that, you know, it's Africans' fault, you know, that we're in this situation? As I look
at the title of his book, well, I'll tell you, my short response was, obviously you haven't read the book. But what would you say? That was my short response.
Right.
But what would you say?
Yeah, to that, am I blaming the victim? Is it African Americans' fault that we're in the situation that we're in? And so one of that, in the prelude to this this interview or these this conversation, is that we've been conditioned to be in this condition. So am I blaming the victim? Well, what I'm looking at within this is to say that prior to us coming here, we were very strong and supportive, and we defended our people, we defended our village, we defended our family. However, there has been strategic planning to convince us otherwise. So it's almost like if you go to a used car dealer and the used car dealer polishes and shines up a car and he puts in this car the greatest radio system, sound system, or may put the best rims on this vehicle. He fashions the interior that it looks extremely well. And he sells that vehicle because he was able to convince the buyer purchase it from the external appearance of the vehicle. So when you purchase the vehicle, you drive off. It sounds pretty good. But then once you're off the lot, now it's yours. Now, who's at fault? Who's at fault? And so what happened is the individual who purchased the vehicle was misled. It was misled. And so what we have to do now is to look at, well, who was really at fault? Who sold the vehicle to this person? The person went in to purchase a nice vehicle. They thought it was a nice vehicle, but it wasn't. What I'm saying is that in essence, we have become victimized. And as a result of being victimized, it's not our fault that we have been victimized. And so I'm not blaming the victim. But what I'm saying is that there are things that we can do. So you have that lemon law. There are things you can do to actually take the vehicle back. And so there are things that African Americans can do now based upon where we are from the resources that we have. So for us to say that, well, this happened to us, there's nothing we can do, we might as well just deal with this. Then I talked about this before a couple of years ago. I mentioned this as the Uncle Tom syndrome. The Uncle Tom syndrome is not looking at Uncle Tom and saying, Uncle Tom, it's your fault, you're the victim. It's saying, Uncle Tom, you need to do something. You need to do something and do what you have the ability to do. Do what you know to do. And so that's what I'm saying. So it's not about blaming the victim or saying, you know, they did this to us. It's saying that this is where we are right now, and here's what we can do about it. And so I move away from saying that, you know, well, they did this to us, and so they owe us. Whereas, you know, the reparations question and topic and issue is extremely valid, extremely valid. Will reparations happen soon? I don't know. However, I don't think it is good for us to wait for someone to give us what we deserve. It's important for us to work for what we deserve and to strive for what we deserve based upon our own capability. And so within our community, within the neighborhood, within Black America, we are more than able to live beyond what we've been conditioned to think we have to live. So when it comes to the school, when it comes to our education, when it comes to our economic status, we are well capable of moving beyond this. And so the only way that we can do this is the way that we've done it before. And that's by helping each other. But we have been somehow conditioned to pull each other down.
Yeah.
So hopefully that answers
great...
the question. So it...
Well, obviously, as I mentioned to the individual, they hadn't read the book, and I believe since then they hopefully have. Because you spell those things out in your book, so I wasn't far off the mark in my response.
Right.
I just didn't know. And you did add a few other nuances to my response, which, again, I hope the person is listening, and if not, I'll be sure to reach back out to them as it crosses my mind that I hadn't responded with their question to you. And the other question, and by the way, to our listeners, As you know, we keep it live all the time. And so, as always, if you'd like to pose a question to Dr. Taylor, the number to dial, if you haven't dialed it already, is 347-838-9142. That's 347-838-9142. And if you haven't done so, you'll press 1 on your dial. And after doing that, our engineer or myself will recognize that you'd like to pose a question or a comment to Dr. Taylor, or just to the topic itself of the crabs in the barrel syndrome. How did we get here? What we might do to move forward? I mentioned at the top of the program, I'm not sure if they had you in the green room, what we call the virtual green room, where you were listening in. And I mentioned that for the most part, or at least unquestionably, significantly, African Americans are in a dire situation. And I said, Dr. Taylor, we aren't talking about that sect of people who are at the BET Awards or the NAACP Awards or any of the other black awards programs who you're seeing in the $1,000 or $3,000 gowns or suits. I said, don't be misled by that. In case you're saying to yourselves, well, we're not that bad. I mean, we have more folks going to college than ever, which is a misnomer, relatively speaking. I know that, being somewhat of a statistician. What do you say to individuals that would say, well, are we really that bad? Now, that's probably an easy one for you, but that's just to get us warmed up. Are we really that bad? Mm-hmm. I see a lot of folks going, well, I see Jay-Z, I see Beyonce, I see Mariah, I see athletes, you know, making millions of dollars. It seems like even, you know, some of our news hosts are African-American more so than ever. Well, you know, are mm-hmm. we really that? What do you say to that?
Well, that's a very good observation, especially for those who are saying it. When you hear those who are saying it, we have to understand where they're coming from, you know, where they live, who they see, their surroundings, because they may live in a place where, you know, they may be accustomed to seeing, you know, blacks doing well, African Americans doing well. But if they really get involved with the great majority, if you go into, you know, some of the places where you have a large population of African Americans, you will then see an entirely different situation. And as I mentioned before, when you go into these places that may not be classified or titled as a black neighborhood, but when you get there, you know it's a black neighborhood, and you see thousands of people, millions of people, of black people living in this condition. When you look at the school system, you see thousands of children, millions of children in these underprivileged school systems. When you see the prison system, when you see everything that somehow can pull a people down, you see us at the top of that list. And so whereas you will find out of, I think we're about maybe 30 million African Americans in the country, you may see 1,000 people, you know, making, you know, doing very well in the entertainment industry. You may see maybe a few thousand of them, of us, doing well in business. But I think we've been here in this country for too long to still be where we are. You know, there are other ethnic groups, nationalities, coming to this country and just moving right up. And what they do, they move up on our backs. And when I say on our backs, is because our ancestors, they bled, they worked, and they did everything they could to make sure that the trees they planted would give us the shade that we needed to be successful. You know, and so you have individuals, you know, coming to this country, and now they're benefiting from affirmative action, they're benefiting from equal employment, they're benefiting from the Civil Rights Act, from all the things that our ancestors and our forefathers fought for. They're benefiting from these things. And so when we look at, are we in a dire situation, everything that we fought for to move us up. Somehow someone stepped in front of us. And it's almost like in the scripture, in the Bible, when Jesus talks about that man sitting by the pool of Siloam, you know, with an infirmity of 38 years. Every time the water is troubled, someone comes and jumps in front of him. And so we're just sitting by the pool of Siloam. And every time the water gets troubled, there's someone that comes over here and they jump in front of us. People who've been here, you know, after we got here, they jump in front of us. So I think our situation is, you know, I think we're still in a very extreme situation. And there are things that are still targeted at us, you know, and it all depends on the type of eye that you have, the type of awareness or consciousness that you have. Because you can watch a television program, you can watch the news, and you can easily see the games that are being played to keep us at a certain level, you know, for us to be exploited, for us to be somehow looked at, ridiculed. So when we become educated, when we become, you know, in the status such as, you know, we have a radio program like Daryl Clark and we're doing things, we then are pointed at as the exception rather than, well, that's what's in us. It's in us to be successful. It's in us to strive. It's in us to work harder than anyone else. That's what's in us. And we're not the exception. You know, Colin Powell wasn't the exception. Condoleezza Rice wasn't the exception. That's just a part of our culture and our heritage. And however, when we look at them, how they've been pushed up so that people can say, look at them, Black America is doing better now. But we still have to look at the masses and not those who are isolated and who are able to somehow capitalize on the opportunities that our ancestors have fought for. So there's still many of us that need to understand and just to be awakened. And so so it really depends on how you look at it. You know, in some parts of Chicago, when I meet people within the deep part of the inner city, you know, and I, you know, invite them to things and I, you know, say things to them and encourage them, you know, to let them know that we're going to be all right. Some of them will tell me that we ain't never going to be all right. Black people can't do nothing. You know, and so because of where they're from, because of what they see, because of their environment, their surroundings, that's how they see it. But if we're, you know, if we've been on the other side, you know, of the track, you know, and we see other people on the other side of the track, then we have a different perspective. You know, so it's those who say that, you know, that we're just over-exaggerating our condition, you really haven't seen the whole picture. You haven't seen the whole picture. You know, once you've made it, you've got to go back and see what's still going on in the neighborhood where you're from. And so when I look at the crabs in the barrel, the way that we get out is that those who got out have to go back in and help them to get out. You know, it's almost like a modern-day Underground Railroad. You know, we have to keep going back and pulling them up. Otherwise, we think that, well, eventually I'm going to end up in prison. Eventually I'm going to end up, you know, on welfare. Eventually I'm going to have to apply for this program that the government, you know, is still offering. You know, that's the barrel mentality. But we have to, those of us that have made it, we have to go back and get them out. That's our responsibility. You know, we have responsibility for each other. You know, and we did have that years ago. We were responsible for each other. You know, if you didn't have enough in your house to bake a cake, you'd go across the street or to your neighbor and get some sugar, get some flour. You know, we can't do, you know, it's not that way as much anymore. It may be that way somewhere in some places, but, you know, that's just history for us. That's things that we used to do. But when we look at how we used to do it, we made it. You know, we were successful. We were on our way. But then something came, someone intentionally threw a wrench in our program.
You know, Dr. Taylor, this is a great segue, because you've been saying all along that there's been no coincidence. And just now you said, you know, then a wrench is thrown into the program, and those things that helped us to not just survive, but to evolve in a racist society, those things, those hurdles, those walls, those things that were put before us were non-coincidental, and it it seems, you know, having read the book, and not to, you know, take the wind out of the sail, so to speak, but we are going to get into a little bit of it so folks will understand the importance of it. It reminds me of an analogy of like the Roach Motel. And instead of,
uh-huh.
and I need you to help me with this, I really do.
Uh-huh.
Instead of going back in to help pull out, it seems like there are those who got out and are raising the sides of the barrel, making it more difficult for those. Help me with this one, and I need to know your perspective, because is it just a matter of not helping? Is there another side to that where, beyond that, there are those that are actually hurting the scenario? And I know this is not what the book is about. The book is about the day the craps got out. Well, wait a minute. Let me back up. I can't say that's not what the book is about, because you're the author, and we're blessed to have with us tonight to say exactly what the book is about. But by some perspectives, especially when I hear we have to, you know, go back and help ourselves, I sense that model is let's go help. But what about uh-huh. the possibility of a scenario where there are those that are literally harming the existing problem or those in the
yeah.
situation.
Right. So one of the things that happens is actually the book does deal with, you know, that piece, looking at, you know, that harming aspect of the barrel. And so that's how the barrel is maintained. The barrel is maintained by preventing others from getting out. That's how you maintain the barrel. And so the barrel cannot be maintained if you pull each other out, but the barrel is maintained. Like if some get out and they start kicking others down who are trying to get out, that's the process. That's the process of the barrel. And then what happens also is that when individuals get out of the barrel, there will be individuals who are in who will, their process of pulling the others down may be, oh, they think they're better than us now. They can't relate to us. They used to, you know, there was a point in time where they lived around us. Now, since they moved, you know, out to the suburbs, they no longer want anything to do with us. And so then that's maintaining the barrel as well, because that is now preventing those from coming back by the intimidation factor that if they come back, there will be hatred thrown against them. And so that maintains the barrel as well. Which is where that whole Willie Lynch idea comes from. You keep them divided. If you keep them divided, then you don't have to worry about them coming together. And so that's that whole process of you know, those who make it out and they look back and they say, well, that's good for them. I got out, you get out on your own. That's not how it works, though.
Okay. That answers it very, very clearly. It's not, when you talk about crabs in the barrel, it's not just those within the barrel that are creating the issue. It's those outside the barrel as well that are not assisting those, which you said earlier, and that addresses mm-hmm. that perspective of if you're outside the barrel and you're not assisting, in effect, you're hurting.
Absolutely.
That
yeah.
maintains the barrel. And to maintain the barrel is to, in fact, inflict a greater harm to the already
mm-hmm.
armed existence of the barrel. That makes sense to me. Again, I want to make sure our listeners understand all they have to do is press 1 on their dial, and we'll recognize that they have a comment or a question. And the number is 347-838-9142. So in terms of some of the potential approaches in your
mm-hmm.
book, you talk about, and you just mentioned it, yeah, just slightly, I don't know if any listeners caught it, you talk about a history of us at one time supporting one another. And
yes.
you gave some examples of how that was done. You used
mm-hmm.
organizations. Talk a little bit about
that, if you will, if you can elaborate somewhat.
All right. So I'm going to speak in reference to, like, entertainers. I'm going to jump to that part. And there is a role that entertainers hold within getting us out of the barrel. Entertainers, media is very influential. What we see on television somehow influences what we believe is normal. And so when we see, you know, derogatory things on television, derogatory themes and derogatory interactions among our people, if that's on television, that is then accepted as normal. And the way that the barrel is maintained also is when those outside of Black America, when they see that, they look at us and they think that, well, we should act the way that they've seen us act on television. You know, that barrel mentality. And so there are several, you know, comedians and entertainers that engage in certain activities on television that allows people to look at us at a certain way. However, there are many now who will present us in a positive light. But for some reason, people like to focus on the negative aspect of us. Years ago, there was a man by the name of Dr. William Cosby, and he came up with this idea to have a working family, to be very successful, a middle-class family. And in this family actually encouraged and promoted family values within the African-American community. A spinoff from the program that he had was there was a program where he showed African-American young adults and teenagers going off to college. In that show, and while that show was on air, on record, the college rate, the enrollment rate increased because of that influence from the media. Also, I'd say years ago, there was, naturally that's William Cosby, Bill Cosby, The Cosby Show, and Different World. Also within the media, there was this one movie that came out years ago by Robert Townsend. And I believe the name of the movie was Hollywood Shuffle. And in the movie, Robert Townsend was trying out for all of these shows. He was a postman, but he really wanted to be an actor. And so in this one callback that he received, the director told him that, you know, show your butt, walk this way, act this way. And as he was doing this, there was this young black, you know, this little black boy watching him. And he was hurt by what the directors and producers were making this African-American man do for the sake of entertainment. Robert Townsend then in the movie decided that he didn't want that job, that he would then do something else. He would, you know, have an honest job and be a post, you know, work for the post office. And so movies like that, there are times in which entertainers will have to make decisions on behalf of Black America. That's how we get out. The entertainers have to make these decisions because they're on television, they're on mass media, and they're influencing the children, they're influencing the parents, they're influencing communities. And so it's, you know, if they will help us to get out of this condition, then they can do it because it's been done. I'm saying that because it's been done.
So on the contrary of that, I would suspect where you have negative influences, i.e., mm-hmm. Entertainers, more so now being of the Stepin-Fetchin kind of image, and images of entertainers who are unsavory in the music industry, for example, that might as well influence young folks to imitate and mimic that behavior, which exacerbates the uh-huh. already negative images that have been portrayed in music through genres such as hardcore rap. And I'm not beating up rap, folks. We just did a program a month ago, so don't go over there, but I'd love to hear it. Now, we did, there's some very positive influences. We had a young brother in his late 20s and a couple of brothers, in fact, were doing, you know, some very good work. But I'm talking about the negative direction that, that music, for many, many years, I'd say at least a decade in those 80s going into the 90s, and then right into the early 2000s, and how mass incarceration increased.
Yes.
And suspect that that was no coincidence based on that empirical study that you just shared with us with regard to William Cosby. Is that not a probability or a possibility?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. With the, you know, and then, you know, with the music, you know, and so there's a distinction that some people make within, you know, the rap hip-hop industry. Whereas, you know, hip hop is a culture, and so the music comes out of the culture. Rap music is also a type of culture, and music comes out of that culture as well. And so it was, you know, stated where there is a line of demarcation where, you know, back in the 80s when you have the hip hop, it was more, most of it was conscious rap. You know, it was consciousness that let us know what's going on and what we need to do, how we need to take care of ourselves. What's going on within our communities and how we can make a positive change in our own lives based on the changes that they've made, you know, as the grills or the hip-hop artists at that time. But the music today, you know, it's not all, we can't just put it all in one cup and say, well, this is all rap music. That's not the case. However, there is, you know, the music that is pushed by those who want to maintain the barrel, and I say that intentionally. There's music that's pushed to maintain the barrel. It's music that degrades our women, that causes us to degrade ourselves, and causes us to look at us as the enemy. And so those are some of the things that we look at.
Mm. Okay, so it's, as you said, intentional that certain music being promoted.
Yes.
Proportionately, no longer a balance. It's not as though there wasn't a hip-hop music of 20 or 30 years ago or type music where the lyrics were illicit, but there was some balance. You could still on a given day hear some good soul or R&B, whereas now it seems disproportionately on mainstream media in mainstream America, if you go to any major city, and I would dare say any of the major cities, Cleveland, Chicago, St. Louis, Houston, L.A., at least in the black communities, the predominant music that's played, from my experience, Atlanta, some less than others, is very disproportionately of a negative. It's starting to change a little bit, but in the last 15 to 20 years, at least the last 15 years, it really almost peaked with a negative image of, as you said, disrespecting women and playing down on oneself, promoting drugs and illicit living. And I'm not trying to be prissy because believe me, anybody that knows my background knows I haven't been the angel of society. So I would not dare try to point a finger and not look at a thumb. But as I said, it seems to not have a balance as it did years ago. It just seems so very far disproportionately bent in that area.
Right.
And so I think I'm hearing you say that that consciousness is going to be so important in this revival that you speak of. So with that, let's talk a little bit about it. And as I mentioned at the top, this is something we're hoping to have as a series. I know there's at least one individual in the wings that I know wants to comment. And so I'm curious if you could, from the entertainment aspect, you said, okay, they have a responsibility. It's not just a
yes.
right. And I take it that you're comparing and contrasting to entertainment of years, days past. You're seeing a contrast from that sense of responsibility, i.e. say it loud, I'm black and I'm proud.
Yes,
is that
absolutely.
So?
Yeah, so with that, you know, it's the responsibility is due to the influence. So what you present on television, what you present on the movies, what you present on radio, it will definitely influence the listeners. And it is known, and with the producers of these different forms of media, they realize this, and so they will dictate what sells. So if you present something that does not appear, for some, if it does not appear to be degrading, they will not want to push it or promote it. They need for it to be a little raunchy. They need for it to be a little, as they would say, ghettoized. They need for it to be a little degrading for them to play it. And they will play it on mainstream radio. However, they will like silence out some of the words that have FCC determined that we can't use those words. They silence it out, but they would silence it out at the point where you already know what it is. And so it's these things that happen. So it is important for those in the entertainment industry to just decide, here's what I'm going to do, you know, for the sake of my people, for the sake of my people. Now, there are many artists today who've backed up some because they understand what's happened to the people. You know, there are many artists. There's some that you don't even hear about anymore because they understand how their music has somehow affected the people. And so they backed up. However, if you listen to all of their music, you know, they put little snippets in. They put little positive snippets in because the challenge is this. Here's the challenge. The challenge is, do I make millions of dollars selling poison to my people, or do I just get by teaching them the truth? And so what they do, they give a little poison and they give a little truth. So you have to, you know, when you take that chance, you know, you have to listen to what they're really saying. But those who try to balance it, most of them have stepped out of the mainstream. And I don't want to call any names, but those who were out there, who we know they were out there and they were out there big, and they're not out there as much now, these individuals, they've been enlightened and they know the game that's been played. And so they're doing things behind the scenes right now. They have several things that they're doing within the community to help Black America. But there are several that are coming up today that are just looking more for the money, regardless of how it's poisoning us. They're looking for the cash, you know, the cash in on the deal that's being played. And so these are some of the things that are happening within our community. When we look at the crabs, getting the crabs out of the barrel is going to take all of us. And so it's not just, you know, I mentioned some organizations, I look at the entertainers, but then it also comes down to each individual within the community. And so to give the whole book, it's the individual. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what's happening within the community. It doesn't matter what organization, which programs, what's being offered, what's being presented. Somehow, in some way, it's the individual that must wake up. The obligation and the role of everyone that I mentioned, it's like we are the alarm clocks. We're like yelling and screaming to wake up, to wake up. And it's up to the individual to get up, to realize what's going on. Otherwise, we just stand in the barrel. And I don't know. Some say that they're in the process of sealing the barrel. And when they seal the barrel, nobody's getting out. So we have to get out while there's still, you know, while there's still an opening. And because we're still getting out, you know, a little at a time, it's important for us to go back and and to pull the rest of us out, so we can eventually just tear this barrel up, just destroy the barrel, and then look back and say that's what kept us in, and just be successful people. That's the idea, that's the goal, that's the dream, is that eventually people will look at us, people will look at us and just be amazed at how great of a people we are. Look at our history, see what we've been through, and see where we are today. And people will, you know, it's the idea that people will be amazed. The world will be amazed at Black America. And not, you know, not necessarily just because we're African, but because we're African American, because of what we've been through. You know, we've come here from Africa. We were enslaved and beat and brought here from Africa. But look at what we've become. Look at what we've become. And so essentially we become the dream of everyone, every nation, every person that lives. They ought to look at us and believe that there is hope in life because of what we've been able to do. But they'll only do that once we get out of this barrel, and we got to help each other out. You know, sometimes this barrel mentality, it can be sickening because I don't know about many of the listeners, but some of us work in places where, you know, there are only a few of us who are sitting in some of these meetings. And so sometimes when some of us show up in a meeting, others may look as if, what are you doing here? You know, that's the barrel mentality. That, you know, the barrel mentality is what are you doing here? But the way we get out of the barrel, it's more like a greeting. It's, you know, good afternoon, brother. You know, good to see another brother in this meeting, or good to see a sister in this meeting. I'm looking forward to hearing your input. I'm looking forward to hear your ideas and how you can contribute to make these things, you know, work more appropriately and more efficiently. You know, that's the way that we get out. We help each other. We encourage each other, you know, and then we go back and we help each other, others out of the situation. And so that's, you know, that's the process of it, because that's how it's been done. Years ago, so we didn't get to the front of the bus, to drive the bus, to own the bus, you know, just by chance. You know, we had to work for that, and those who fought and worked for it are still around today. So that's why I know it's possible. I know it's possible. You know, part of psychological research is that past behavior predict future performance, because you have the ability. If you've done something in the past, there's a great likelihood that you're going to do it again, or that you can do it again.
Well, that's encouraging. Past behavior predicts future outcome.
Yes.
And on the positive side of that is, as you mentioned earlier, we weren't always predominantly in this crab in a barrel mindset. Would you say we are predominantly in a crab barrel mindset? And it goes back to that comment, question, dialogue between us of, you know, what about those who are doing well? But would you say predominantly? How bad is it?
I would say predominantly we are in the barrel. There are more of us in the barrel than outside of the barrel. I would put it that way. Yeah, more of us in the barrel than outside of the barrel. And, you know, and one of the things, you know, when we talk about my, like the book tour actually was more of a lecture an inspirational lecture that I gave in different parts of the country, just so people can understand the message of the book. The message of the book is the most important thing, you know, that we do what we have done to get ourselves out of this situation. And so, you know, there have been calls and there have been requests to look at reparation because of what has happened to us as a people. And then there have been different appeals or different backlashes to that, stating that, well, slavery happened so long ago, and, you know, there are many things that are being said. But I think it's important for us not to wait for someone to come and save us. You know, that we have to save ourselves. You know, so going back to that piece, am I blaming the victims? Are African Americans at fault? What I'm saying is, essentially, we have to save ourselves. We have to save ourselves. This is what they did to us. Here's where we are. Now let's move. Let's do what we need to do. And the book, you know, I didn't want the book to be a thick book. I didn't want the book to have many pages. I wanted individuals to be able to read the book and then understand what needed to be done without, you know, spending weeks or a month, you know, reading through the book, because I don't think we have that much time. I don't think we have that much time. I think a lot of things are being put in place, you know, a lot of things are being put in place to, if it's possible, to expedite our extinction, if that's possible. But things are being put in place today. You know, there are schools are closing and prisons are being built. You have, you know, you have private companies, corporations purchasing prisons. And then you also have private companies and corporations purchasing schools in the inner city. And so there's a lot of things going on, a lot of things going on. You know, you have we have AIDS and HIV running through our city. We have individuals with mental illnesses who are looking to drugs for relief, and then they're actually penalizing individuals who are using drugs to relieve their mental illness, and now they're incarcerating them because of their mental illness. And then when they get out, they don't have access to the mental health because they actually cut the budget for mental health. And it's a very interesting cycle and process that's happening within our community. But it's up to us. I believe it's up to us to get ourselves out of the barrel and not wait for someone to lower down a rope to pull us out outside of us. You know, we can lower the rope, but I don't think we should wait for some other nationality or government law to be passed. I think we can do the things that need to be done within our community. You know, I had given a lecture about the book in this one area, and this one sister said to me, I don't think I'll ever forget it, this one sister said to me, after I mentioned what we have to do to help us, you know, I went through the book, gave the outline of the book, this sister stood up and said to me, well, what's the white man going to do for us? You know, what are the white people going to do for us? You know, and so if you get into, if you dive into the barrel and you go, there's one, you know, this one brother told me, he was a director of one of the libraries where I made a presentation at. He told me that, you know, when you're in the heart of the barrel, man, you see everything. You see how real we are entrenched in the barrel. You know, you see the situation that we're really in. And so within that frame of mind, that reference point, the sister said to me, what are they going to do for us? You know, it's not about what we're going to do for ourselves. You know, if we always look for them for something, for approval, we'll never have anything. You know, I 5 years ago, I started a career fair for Black America. And that's what I called it, a career fair for Black America. And many people say, well, you shouldn't call it that. You should call it a diversity career fair, a multicultural career fair. You should just call it a career fair. So my response to them was, no, I'm calling it a career fair for Black America because that's who it's for. And so they wanted me to get approval, approval to have a name that was appropriate. But if we wait for approval, if we wait for approval, we will still be on the plantation getting our backs beat and whipped. You know, if we move up even further, we'll wait for approval, we will still have the Plessy versus Ferguson situation of 1896. We'll still be, you know, we'll still have that separate but not quite equal status of our existence. You know, if we waited for approval, we would still have to stand in line until all the white folks have been served, and then we can now be served. If we waited for approval, we would have to get up every time some white person got on the bus and they were tired and the seats were only available in the back. If we waited for approval, we wouldn't have educational opportunities. If we waited for approval, we would still be paid less than the person who's doing less than what we're doing. If we waited for approval, we would be in a horrible situation, a horrible state. So I don't think we should wait. I think we should do what needs to be done, what we know we can do, and not wait for some white person or some government official to say, okay, you all can do that now. There are many things we can do because they've already been done. But like in the heart of the barrel, they're waiting for someone else to do it for us.
Dr. Taylor, I'm getting comments. I don't dare ask a question because I'm being fed. So you believe me, you're enthralling the listeners. I'm getting texts back and forth here. So this is beautiful. In your book, as a comparison to what you said about we have to, as individuals, step out. Because at the end of the day, whether it's an organization or not, it's individuals that will make an organization. But I did not want to leave this segment. And Dr. Taylor, I can't even express in words how excited I am about the potential for this series, meaning you've been working with me and I've been working with you over many years, and you know how when we series, it's not 1 week or two, we get it done and we take care of it and we've had some progress. I'm saying all that to say I want to touch upon one specific piece of your book, which hopefully will lead into the next time, and I would love it if you can open up our Black History Month next week. But we can talk about that offline if you can, because I would like to pick right up from this, because I want to put a mass mailing out to everyone within my Facebook and those who are friends of those Facebook to try to really get a mass movement as best as I can generate with the few thousands that I may be able to reach out to. You in your book, in comparison to the individual responsibility, talk about the responsibility of those who have been there before. And you mentioned specifically churches, you mentioned fraternities, and one of our guests, one of our authors, was so moved by one of your programs that he and I had a conversation and said, we want to support. And that's where the dialogue that you and I came from, actually, model. And I believe he's still in the green room. And I just wanted to hear what his comment might be, if you will. I his name is Kevin Porter, and you have actually been on a program with Kevin before, I believe probably about a year ago. Kevin is an author. He is a fraternity leader of of the Kappas. Yeah, I had to think about that because I've been talking with many leaders, and I had to think about what Kevin's probably saying. You don't dare, don't you dare mix me with the alphas or the omegas. No, but Kevin's a sharp guy. He started a mentoring program for young men. I don't want to, you know, sit here and you know, give a bio or anything of that nature. But I can say that that Kevin has walked the talk. And with that said, I'd like to just ask him if he has a couple of words before I know he has to leave in regard to, you know, what you're talking about right now. He's executive director of Man Made Mentoring. It's a black male mentoring group that he started in Texas. His book is titled Angry Little Men, Hypermasculinity, Academic Disconnect and Mentoring African-American Males. He started many programs, one of which is called the CODE program, Connect to a Vision, Observe and Moderate, Practice Self-Discipline, and Emulate Positive Examples. And I just wanted, because I know that he has to leave, but I'm hoping that he'll join us in the next segment and we can really get some footage on this. So without any more said, he's here in our virtual studio. Kevin, are you there?
Yes, Brother Clark, I'm here, and Brother Dr. Taylor.
Yes, sir.
I enjoyed this conversation. I'm sure your listeners have enjoyed it, and I also enjoyed your book as well.
Oh, thank you, brother.
I got a got a copy the last time you were on. So I'm very impressed. But what really touched me in the book was the fact that you recognize that organizations have an obligation and responsibility to go back and help bring the crabs out of the barrel, right? You know, once
yes, sir.
We all consider ourselves in Black Greek terms, what have you, it's really consider ourselves the elite, the top. The, you know, we are college educated, well trained, and we completely get into corporate America, entrepreneurship, and what have you. But we can't just stay on that pedestal. We have to go back. And I think part of your message in your book was that's how our organization was founded.
Yes, sir.
Founded on in a time where blacks weren't at universities, especially predominantly whites, and got outside. I know you remember as well as I am, was founded at Indiana University. And at that time, 1911, a little bit prior to that, there weren't very many blacks on campus. And the men that founded the organization understood and they saw the potential of how organizations help each other. And
yes, sir.
One thing we wanted to do is help the brothers on the campus to succeed. It's one thing to encourage somebody, but it's another thing to give out a hand and help them. It's another thing to sit by them. It's another thing to be a part of their, on a fraternal sense. It's another thing to just be a part of their life for the rest of their life and to be have something common, a common motto, a common message. And you mentioned that in your book, and that is, you know, what I've taken from my organization and brought it into the community. I mean, that's what the model was. The model was we're going to go back, we're going to teach these young men, we're going to be a part of their lives, and then we expect them to go out to the world, to the community, and help. And I think for the most part, we are lacking that. However, the structure is still there.
Yes.
The organization is there. But what, the reason why I say we're lacking is that we still have problems, right? You know, I see more problems popping up than I do see success. That's how life is. Anyway, the media what have you will show the negative. But there's a lot we need to do. There's a lot we need to do, and the fraternities are an avenue for us doing that. And I know a girl wanted to bring me on because I work heavily with young men. I'm a Mason as well. I'm a Shriner, and, you know, a captain. So I utilize and leverage.
Brother, you all in the book.
Yeah. I leverage all these organizations because they were put there in a time when we had nothing. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now we seem to have a little bit of everything, and the numbers are not looking good. Okay. Because now black men can live far away from the black community, right? And when these organizations were built, they were built in a where we were going to be close together. Now you can go to any church. Now you can be a part of these business organizations, or you can be part of Toastmasters. There's so many different organizations, but the one thing we cannot forget is we have to go back and get our kids.
That's right.
We have to go back. We got to go back and get our kids. And that's why FLSI and the Kappa League and our Guideline program is a model. And I know the Alphas have a program and Omegas and the Deltas are doing outstanding things in the program. But I think, Brother Clark, I think we want to get that message and get these organizations together on the same page so that 2017, not only just talking about it here, we want to do something big where people see us.
Uh-huh.
Because we're strong, but people don't see us. And when they
right.
see us, and then that word of achievement becomes clear. It's only clear to the people we talk to, but if nobody lets that light shine, then nobody else sees it. So that's where we want to be now. We're trying to get that, we're trying to let that light shine into the dark places. We don't need the light to only shine where kids are doing well. They don't need the light. We need the light. They need the, we need the light where the kids are not doing well. That's where the darkness is. So hopefully, you know, we can collaborate and speak and, you know, make this happen. But your book, The Day of the Crafts, got out. Great book. I suggest people go get that. And I suggest that they tune in to Progressive Radio with Brother Clark. And we're going to have a movement. We're going to have a movement.
Yes, sir.
We don't have the pen to do executive orders, but what we can do is get a movement going. So I look forward to continue to work with both of you good brothers.
Appreciate it, Brother Porter.
All right.
Well, Mr. Porter, appreciate those comments. I'm glad that you were able to spend a few moments with us. I know you had an engagement and you took some time away from that, but hopefully you'll be able to join us because this is a series that I really want to try to build on and see some get some traction. The model that Dr. Taylor is presenting, I think, is one that many can galvanize around. So I'm excited about it. And Dr. Taylor, you know, we have done this many times. but would you help head up something like this, an effort collectively to bring some of these organizations together?
You know, that sounds excellent. One of the things also I mentioned before was that possibly that I can, you know, meet in New Jersey and just do some town hall meetings, you know, where the bulk of your listeners are. You know, you and I can just go and do town hall meetings to hear the questions, you know, from the people, just sit face to face to see exactly what we need to do and to make sure that these things get done. Because one of the things, you know, another reason I wrote the book that with the size of the book is because I think that we have, you know, we've studied and we've talked. We still need to study, we still need to talk, but at the same time we need to do. And I think it's important for us to sit and understand and strategically understand how this must be done. So I did meet, you know, Brother Porter, you know, had talked about the Capital Leading and Guy Wright program. So I did meet with in the Middle Western province of Kappa Alpha Psi, I did meet with, you know, several fraternity chapters in that area. I've also met with the several Prince Hall Masons. I went to the Grand Lodge of Massachusetts. I've also went to the Grand Lodge of Illinois. And just to share, you know, with the brothers there, with the Prince Hall Masons, what, you know, just reminding them and just to stir up within them some of the things that Prince Hall stood for, you know, while he was here. And I think it's important, you know, for the organization to understand that. And it's also like a rallying call for those who somehow have left the organizations. They've become idle. But if we, you know, if there's a town hall meeting, we mention some of these things, and then people can go back home and then nudge those people who are part of these organizations to get them back on the road, back on the path in this journey to get us all where we need to be, and that's out of this barrel.
I love that. Let's have that discussion. I know that many, if not most, if by some standards, all of these organizations feel as though they're doing something. So then let's have a dialogue on how we can enhance that something and get more momentum collectively by working together. So that I'd like to have that discussion. I like to affectionately call Mr. Kevin Porter, Dr. Porter. Kevin, Dr. Porter, looking forward. I know you've got an engagement. We're only on for about two or three more minutes. So let's talk offline, perhaps,
okay.
Dr. Miller and yourself, Mr. Porter.
All right. That would be great.
All right.
You brothers take
Peace
care, and thank you for having me on. Bye.
All right. And Brother Porter, thank you so much for your comments, and I really appreciate being on the program with you on. I appreciate that very much, brother.
Okay, so I have a caller, and we only have a couple of minutes. I think this is one of I believe I recognize the number. So many numbers. 878. Are you there? Out of New Jersey. Hello. Going once.
Okay. Yes, we just have another about a minute, and I believe that's one of our local community leaders here. That number is so familiar. But we will have an opportunity for the listeners that did want to comment going forward. We just wanted to establish the foundation to give you an idea for those of you who are not familiar with Dr. Taylor's model and book. Just to give you an idea of what that's about, getting it firsthand. So I encourage everyone, where can the book be purchased or reviewed? Or Barnes & Noble, I know, is one spot, right, Dr. Taylor?
Yes, Barnes & Noble's, Amazon.com. It's also available on my website, EddieTaylorPhD.com. Anywhere where books are sold, any bookstore can actually have get access to the book. But Barnes & Noble's, Amazon.com are the two that sometimes they offer discounts on the books. And also on my website, there's a 10% discount on the book at EddieTaylorPhD.com.
Okay. Okay. That's helpful. All right. Just had another comment come in. A listener would like to comment. Oh, okay. This is
so,
one of our community leaders. One of our community
Sunday.
Leaders I get through.
So,
we'll have to pick him up next week, who had a comment. Was very impressed as well with, say, about the crabs in the barrel and the day the crab is out. Dr. Taylor, as we come to the end of this first segment of this series, this has been lightning. I knew it was going to be as exciting and thrilling and encouraging as it was, and it was even a bit more I expected. So can we talk offline about moving? Okay, I think there was some interference from another line. Can we talk offline, Dr. Taylor, about next steps and moving forward then?
Yes, sir. Yeah, we could do that for sure.
Well, to our listeners, we thank you. I know there may have been one or two, just a couple technical difficulties trying to get the couple of callers to bridge in. But we'll certainly be ready for you next week. We're going to reach out to a couple of other community leaders locally and across the country and get some more input on this situation and how we might address it collectively. And as Dr. Taylor has said throughout the program, it's truly the ball's in our court. And the one thing that stood out, as I was making notes along the way, there was one thing after another, and I always try to walk away with one thing. It's not easy, especially when you have the likes of a Dr. Taylor. But I have to say the one thing that stood out for me is, Dr. Taylor, you said that we don't have much time. So, you know, this is a scenario we need to really get to it when we can. It's important. When someone, as your acumen, says we don't have much time, I take that very, very seriously. And it tells me that we got to get up and move.
Yes,
and
sir.
We can't do it laissez-faire. And so that's why I like to pick up on this as quickly as I can, given, you know, your calendar and your time frame. Would love it if you are available next week, or hopefully at least the week after. Catch the wave while it's high. The lines were really blowing up here in terms of the listenership tonight. So I'm going to definitely be reaching out to you.
in the next 24 hours, you know, hoping that I can connect with you. And I know if I can't, when I leave you a message, you'll be reaching back, as you always have over the years, as soon as you can. So I'm encouraged. I thank you again. Folks, if you caught the end of the program and I saw a lot of lines popping up at the end of the program, you'll want to go to the archives on this one. And the archives are available immediately after the program. You simply want to go to blogtalkradio.com/Renford, R-E-N-F-O-R-D. That's the network that we're on. And you'll see all the archives on the programs under Radio by Renford. And mine is right there, Daryl Clark's Progressive News Weekly. And you'll see it. It'll say with Dr. Eddie Taylor, January 26th. You'll click on that and you'll be able to hear the whole program. This is especially, I believe, important for our children. So if you're one of the many teachers that tune in from week to week, I encourage you to share it with your classrooms. I believe the book is a good read, in fact. Would you say, Dr. Taylor, for classroom at a certain level?
Yeah, I would agree, because it helps them to see what's going on within their community. And so it would definitely be something for children to be able to, just an awakening up for them to see that what's happening in their community is something that has been planned and is not in their favor. And so they can do something about it, even as a child.
That was my take. It's not a heavy read, and it's certainly put very succinctly. So we're all in this together. And with that said, Dr. Taylor, thank you so much. Dr. Eddie Taylor, psychologist, author, educator, and human and civil rights activist, especially in the Black community. Thank you once again. We'll be in touch very soon. Looking forward to having you back. If I had my druthers, we'd be right back here next week as we open up our Black History programming. So with that said, keep in mind, we are in this together. Tell someone about Progressive News Weekly. Tell someone whom you love that you love them. That's the best way to start, show them. Then follow those words up with action. Earn this love together. Show it. Get out this barrel. It can be done, but we don't have much time.
We got the whole